See, this is why the Next Fan Up podcast has something that other podcasts don't have.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, your Seahawks superfan. We've got kind of a compressed show today as we get ready for our division previews, which will be coming up. So a quick little tease there. With me today, I've got Nick, the Chiefs superfan. What's up, Nick?
Not too much. Just, one wide receiver short.
Yeah. And we'll definitely talk about that. I'm also here with Ken, the Chargers superfan. What's happening, Ken?
Nothing much, but I do want to go on record and take my name, and I don't want to be known as the Chargers superfan anymore. I'd now like to be referred to as the Chargers expert, as the move to L.A. has taken away the fun out of watching football.
Yeah, I mean, how much fun could you have had being a Chargers fan these last few years anyway? Let's be honest.
Not a lot. I stopped watching in Week 15 last year. It's embarrassing, but it's true.
All right, so on today's show, we're going to talk pretty much three key stories. We're going to talk a bit about Jeremy Maclin and his departure from Kansas City. We're also going to talk about Dennis Pitta, the gentleman with the cursed hip who seems to constantly dislocate it, who has put an end to what's been when he's played a really good career. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the recent article in ESPN, the magazine, about my Seahawks, about sort of the dysfunction, that ongoing Super Bowl hangover. I'm sure Nick and Ken have plenty of hangover stories. They can contribute to that. So let's just get to it. The biggest surprise of this week, at least to me, was the news that the Chiefs suddenly released Jeremy Maclin. And, you know, this wasn't even your normal offseason release. I mean, he's been at OTAs, hasn't he, Nick?
Yeah, he's been at OTAs and by all accounts have been, performing well out there. I mean, he had a down year last year. And so this has been something that a very small subset of Chiefs fans have been kicking around on the Twitters and things like that. But basically, no one really expected it to happen. And it was truly shocking when it came down the pike. And I think the biggest reasons why it's so shocking is just because Maclin is one of Andy Reid's guys. I mean, he, you know, gave him a big contract to bring him over from Philadelphia. They actually got hit by, they lost a third and a sixth over a tampering penalty for that contract, essentially, and those negotiations. Reid was just at Maclin's wedding 2 weeks ago. And it's well known that they're actually personally very close. And so to see him get cut at this point of the offseason was really sudden, really surprising. They also tend to run all of this stuff through Alex Smith, who, you know, as milquetoast as he is, I mean, he came out of the media and said that he was absolutely shocked by it and was basically as disgruntled as you'll ever hear Alex Smith publicly be about it, which is really surprising. I mean, like, when they were, like, looking at quarterbacks, even had Alex Smith in the film room with them, going over film of like Mahomes and the other quarterbacks are thinking about taking to, you know, obviously eventually replace him. So like that's how much they keep him in the loop. And so he was totally blindsided by this. So those are all the reasons why it's shocking. But really when it comes down to it, I think it's debatable how sensible the move was, but it's logical on a number of levels. The three things are basically the big cap saver, the Chiefs have some emerging receivers that I think they're really high on. And basically, I think some of this does have to do with Alex Smith. And so, I mean, firstly, basically, the Chiefs, by making this a post-June 1st cut, they saved $10 million this year, and they were already needing some money. They needed another $1 million just to be able to sign all of their rookies to their rookie deals. And so they needed to find that money somewhere, and they could have found $1 million somewhere else with a restructure, with a cutting some smaller player. So it's interesting that they free up this $10 million. That's going to get them that plus more. And so, I mean, from a fan perspective, you know, this is definitely not addition by subtraction. This is something where, you know, we're losing a good player, but if they can use that money to bring in another good player, the jury's still out on this overall for me for that reason. But the main thing is I also think that they just viewed Maclin as being a really expensive piece that was going to become a secondary piece in terms of their wide receiving options this year. We saw, obviously, Tyreek Hill blast onto the scene last year. Chris Conley was a third-round pick a couple of years ago, has really developed into a good outside receiver. And basically, those two guys are the good outside receivers. Maclin has always been a guy who's, he's not totally a burner, but he's a elite route runner. know, he's a great intermediate option, but actually Travis Kelce is better at that intermediate stuff. And so Jeremy Maclin, by, you know, throughout the season, he was banged up a bit. He was going through some personal issues, so he had the worst season of his career. But he basically became, he was playing slot 50% of the time. And I think, the writing was on the wall that he was going to be in the slot more than 50% of the time this year. And, he's owed basically $12 million this year, whereas the rest of the entire wide receiving core is making $7.7 million. So, he became a very expensive slot option. And again, the Chiefs, are mostly running two wide receiver sets. And so he was becoming a really expensive option that wasn't going to get used a lot. So there is that. The other thing I think, and this kind of goes back to some of the discussions we've had over the offseason, going back and forth about Mahomes and is Alex Smith good enough? Does he deserve to be replaced? And I think last year was kind of the year where I had gone from being a total Alex Smith defender, and I still don't think he's bad. But last year was sort of the year where I kind of came around to the more critical side of the argument, and this is why. I mean, it's basically because, the whole argument was, you can win a Super Bowl with a game manager, which is true if you have this, top five defense, you have everything else around him is perfect. And I think the Chiefs did an amazing job of actually building up the team in every other spot to being extremely high level around Alex Smith. And last year, Alex Smith was like the fifth least pressured quarterback in the league. He also had a really good wide receiving core. I mean, like, in terms of the weapons he can throw to, you got Kelce, you got Hill, you have Conley, Maclin, and he actually ended up having a regressing season. He threw only just 15 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, and the Chiefs did not have a good third down conversion rate. I mean, it was kind of clear from last year that this guy is now, he's going into his 13th year in the league. I mean, he's not bad, but you could even have the perfect team around him, and he's only going to get incrementally better. He's sort of hit his ceiling. And I think that's what clicked in the Chiefs' mind, and that in the same way, like if we can save $10 million by getting rid of one of these secondary options, he's not, Peyton Manning in his prime. It's not like we're getting that much more. And if you look at actually, Maclin's statistics, he had 44 receptions for 500 yards last year. I mean, it was not, just with Alex Smith, you're not getting $10 million worth of production out of that wide receiver. So I think there's logic to it, but again, it's not something where the team is better because of it, unless they really hit it out of the park with what they use this money on.
Do you have a sense for how this move is playing in the Kansas City fan base? Are people agreeing with it? Are people mad about it? What's your feeling on that?
Every fan poll I've seen has been overwhelmingly against it, basically. And I the only reason why I'm sort of, holding out judgment a little bit is just because I want to see what they do with the money. If they don't do anything with the money, then I don't quite get it. I guess it's the two other points to make on that. One is that, if this team is confident that they're building this young core, they're going with Mahomes next year, and so then they can maybe roll over $10 million of their unused cap space into next year and really, push hard to put a bunch of weapons around Mahomes, like, that kind of makes sense. I mean, you look at the wide receiving core now, and every single player that's now still a Chiefs wide receiver is 24 years old or younger. And basically, the biggest sort of question, in terms of the fan base and the beat writers and things like that, the biggest training camp question, other than just how the quarterback's going to look, was really what they were going to do, who's going to be the odd man out in that wide receiver room, because they really have like 7 guys that they like. There's a lot of young dudes there, a lot of guys that are recent draft picks, and it was really going to be difficult to see who was going to get cut down. They have about 7 guys that they like, and so there's going to be a couple of them that are going to be the odd man out. And I think that part of this was just, we can save a bunch of money, and we can just, totally go with our young guys and, be going into this long-term future with them.
See, this is why the Next Fan Up podcast has something that other podcasts don't have. When it initially broke that Maclin was not on the Chiefs, I'm like, cool. No more wide receiver that's pretty good on the Chiefs. As a Charger fan, that makes me excited. But then as I hear Nick talk about it, it's like, do I really want them to have $10 million more in cap space? No, I'd rather have them have Maclin, because Macklin's not going to do much anyway. And so I think on the Next Fan Up podcast, you got to come on here to see if the fans like the move that the team made, or if we didn't like the move the team made. And Nick just told us, if it's for money only, it's a bad move. But if it's a team-building move because they realize that Maclin is not part of the Chiefs Super Bowl winning championship formula, then damn it, I want them to have Macklin back, you know, as a Chargers fan.
Well, also, I mean, you look at this, the way that the Chiefs have just, their offenses have worked in the Andy Reid, Alex Smith era. You know, they famously had in 2014, they had a season with zero wide receiver touchdowns. I mean, Alex Smith likes throwing it to his intermediate targets, which are really his tight ends and his running backs anyway. The running backs are going to continue to get a huge portion of the overall targets in the passing game. And so just the number three wide receiver in the Chiefs offense, under Alex Smith in particular, is just not going to give you a whole lot of production no matter what.
My question on this would be, is it possible that Alex Smith's worst production last year is because he didn't have Jeremy Maclin, though? I mean, when I go back to 2 years ago, Jeremy Maclin was explosive, dynamic. I've said it on the show before that if he didn't get hurt in the playoff game before the Patriots, I think the Chiefs would have won that game. Come last year, he's, like you said, hurt, misses several games, not really healthy all year. They also don't have Jamaal Charles. So, I don't know, I'm just not totally convinced this is a good move. I understand the cap allocation part of it, but is it not possible that Alex Smith needs a healthy Jeremy Maclin to operate and push the ball down the field, and he just didn't have it this past year?
I mean, you could make that case. I mean, I tend to think of it as, I mean, and look, I mean, in 2015, Maclin, he broke franchise numbers for the Chiefs. Chiefs never really had great wide receivers, and he had a literally historic season for the Chiefs. So I think, and that's the thing, it's like, I think most Chiefs fans are sort of expecting him to come back into that form this year, and it's going to be another great year for him. What's changed in between and what changed in the middle of last season, you know, it wasn't just that Maclin was injured, it was the emergence of Tyreek Hill, really. And it was, you know, the team sort of figuring out how this offense was going to work long-term without Jamaal Charles, as you mentioned as well. I mean, with Hill, I mean, Hill is a better deep threat than Maclin. He's more dynamic in a few different ways than Maclin. He's not polished, but I think the Chiefs are showing that they believe he's going to be the new number one. And in fact, I mean, it was like a changing guard in the middle of last season. He was taking snaps and taking the spots from Maclin, as was Chris Conley, who is sort of who similarly is not fully polished, but physically has actually like better traits than Maclin. He's bigger. He's a little bit faster. And so I think that they just view this as sort of a passing the torch situation. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, I mean, like I said, if you thought that the Chiefs were going to get something like 2015 Maclin this year, this is going to be a big loss. And I guess the next question is, the biggest thing that worries me, honestly, about this is just where he lands. I mean, I think just about any team in the NFL would like them some Jeremy Maclin. And what I worry about is he's like a perfect fit for the hoodie up in New England. I mean, he's an elite route runner. He's smart. He has almost perfect hands. He had like two or three drops his entire Chiefs career. So, you know, he looks like a perfect replacement for Amendola, and it's going to drive me nuts if he goes there and, you know, gives him a 1,200-yard season.
Ken, what would you think of Jeremy Maclin coming to the Chargers?
Well, see, the thing is, the Chargers have so many freaking injuries that I will take any player that is good on the Chargers, because I don't care how much it costs. I want a professional out there on Sunday, not these street free agents that the Chargers have had to have at literally any position other than a quarterback over the past couple of years. But yeah, he would be a perfect fit. We just got Mike Williams. Keenan Allen's coming back. Keenan Allen is the, you know, prototypical slot guy that can make it happen on the outside. And if we could stick Maclin on the inside, Mike Williams on the outside, and Keenan Allen on the outside, that is a recipe for, I think, a lot of points. So yeah, I'd take him for sure.
All right, let's flip gears real quick, talk about a guy who is not looking for a new team. That's Dennis Pitta, tight end for the Baltimore Ravens. And this is kind of a bummer story. He's injured his hip. I want to say it's a dislocation. It's his third time in the last 5 years doing so. And if I'm not mistaken, I think, isn't a dislocated hip what eventually led to Bo Jackson's retirement? In any case, he's a good player for Baltimore. When he's been healthy, he's been one of the absolute best pass-catching tight ends in the league. But this guy is just snake bit. and I mean, there's so few good tight ends in the game today, I think, who can really catch a pass. This is a pretty big blow to the Ravens. Ken, I'll just kind of start with you. You know, you've kind of gone through a transition where, you know, you had a, you know, all-world tight end. Not saying that's necessarily where Pitta was, but then, you know, he's obviously gotten older. He's not the same player he used to be. So how do you fill that void?
So here's the thing with tight ends is we're going to have to get a little racial if you want me to talk about them, because the only two tight ends I know the most about are Antonio Gates and Hunter Henry, and they profile as pretty much the same player. So I just think it's weird that all the really good white tight ends get hurt all the time, like Gronkowski and Pitta, and remember Jeremy Shockey was always hurt. It just seems to me like it's a position where it takes so much toll on your body that it doesn't matter who's going out there, you're eventually going to get hurt. And it's a miracle. This is why Antonio Gates is the first ballot Hall of Famer, that he was able to do it so good for so long with two quarterbacks. And he was consistent even up until last year when he was, again, hurt, because it's such a hard position to play on your body as an NFL player. So it's, I don't know, I feel bad for these guys. I mean, in the sense that they don't get to play football. They're still making millions of dollars. But, you know, they are sacrificing their body for our entertainment. And that's one thing. I hear stories about that. Like, or I hear stories about this, and I think, wow, that sucks for the guy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know. No, now that you mention it, you're right. It does seem like high-end tight ends are frequently injured, more so than most other positions. What do you think feeds into that, Nick?
Well, I mean, you know, there are guys that are, you're getting the worst of the high-impact work that, you know, linemen get. You know, like linemen get a certain types of injuries because they're having to square up with dudes and, you know, and block. And so they get, you know, you get the back problems, you get all, you know, things from that. And then they're also running out there cutting, and so they have their at risk the same things that wide receivers are getting. You know, they're breaking their hands, they're blowing out their knees when they get cut, or where they get hit low or get hit on the hand as they're, you know, they're going down there. So, I mean, they take all kinds of abuse. I mean, they run the gamut of potential injuries. So, I mean, that's probably part of it.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I think of, you know, when you're in the red zone and things are tight, usually your people are looking for that big target, which means that, you know, typically they're going over the middle, all these bodies flying around, and there's not a lot of space. I'm amazed tight ends last as long as they do, now that we're discussing it a little bit more.
Just to add to my injured white tight ends, Tyler Eifert, anyone? Hello? Tyler Eifert, he's been hurt. I'm just saying, like, if you think about it, if you really think about it, and this really has nothing to do with race other than white tight ends get hurt, like, that's the extent of it. But, like, think about the last great white tight end. Jimmy Graham wasn't hurt that much, but isn't he, like, half white? Like, he eventually got hurt in Seattle. You know all about that, Justin. Like, tight end is this crazy position that I think only maniacs in the future are going to be doing tight ends. Like, you look at Martellus Bennett. Martellus Bennett's a great tight end. He's also, if you go look at his interviews, a freaking maniac, man. He's crazy. But he's funny. Like, he's one of my favorite players. But these tight ends, they're like running backs, like Marshawn Lynch, another great example. These crazy positions where your body gets broken up, once you get to the NFL level, like, it's no wonder that these personalities come out, because to get to be that guy, to be a tight end, be a running back in the NFL, you have to take so much injury, like, just like dents on your body all the time. It's crazy.
I will say that Kelsey, although he blew out his knee and basically redshirted his rookie year, he hasn't missed a game since then. But that's probably because he's part Zeus.
There you go. But, I mean, it adds to my white tight ends get injured theory. Add it to the list.
All right, I'm going to move on before we get in more trouble from Pod Vader. So the next thing I want to talk about, it'll be interesting to kind of hear your guys' perspective on this. ESPN, the magazine, just recently had this big article sort of talking about my team, the Seahawks, talking about dysfunction in the locker room. And it really mostly highlighted Richard Sherman and Russell Wilson. Richard Sherman being, I think everybody knows who Richard Sherman is at this point in terms of his personality. And, you know, him basically blaming Russell Wilson and the coaching staff for that Super Bowl loss. And even now, you know, a few years removed, that still being a really hot button. I think everybody remembers some of the stuff last year, you know, yelling at coaches on the sideline. At one point in a, you know, a goal line situation, throwing a pass, you can hear Richard Sherman, you know, barking that, you know, we've seen how that turns out before. And so, you know, just this really kind of, I think the Seahawks are known for being very open in terms of letting players have their personalities, but having a very positive, high energy coach, and, you know, Russell Wilson sort of portraying this, you know, all, you know, glasses half full, optimistic, everybody, you know, do your best sort of thing. And then this article comes out, which pretty much turns a lot of that on its head. Now, from, as you can imagine, that didn't play well with the team. You know, guys like Michael Bennett have come out and said that the article is trash. You know, have come out to defend all the players involved. And I'm hoping, this is a sneak preview, I'm hoping to get actually a real insider with the team who really knows what it's like in the locker room on sometime this week to dive deep into it. But at least, you know, from the fan perspective, you know, when I read the article, I think some of the conclusions are wrong, but all the observations he make are pretty accurate. You know, so at least as the Seahawks super fan, I see that, and as much as I hate a lot of it, I do nod my head a bit to quite a bit of it. Let's start with you, Ken. Obviously, you know, my team is in the news a lot, not always for the best reason. So, as sort of an outsider fan, what's your perspective?
So before the Chargers moved to LA, I would have been like, yeah, that kind of sucks for you. I'm sorry your team's going through that. Because as a fan of the NFL, we all know this is just one big reality show. But now that I don't have a team really anymore, now I think that any article written about any team that has won a Super Bowl in the last 10 years that makes it look like there's dysfunction in their organization, I find it hilarious. Because I've had to live through that scenario with North Turner and Spanos. And eventually, you know, like, I lost my team, man. So anytime I see this turmoil and you got to celebrate a Super Bowl in the last 10 years, I just look at these things and I read them and I laugh. I laugh so hard.
Yeah, you know, that one of the things that kind of comes up in the article, though, is, you know, there's this perspective that, you know, the quarterback is treated differently, which I think is true in most situations. But, you know, yours is a team with a high-end quarterback. Have you heard over the year, you know, people complaining about him not being accountable, things like that?
Absolutely not. So here's the thing that I love about Rivers. If the Chargers were a religion, Philip Rivers would be my Jesus Christ, because he plays the role of a quarterback, and he's hilarious when he does it because he has 9 kids in San Diego. Here's the thing about San Diego. Unless you're an NFL quarterback, you cannot afford a place to live with 9 kids. And so it's just like he has this persona and he talks trash and the team rallies behind him. So, you know, we've never had an article come out about Rivers. If anything, it's Rivers telling the organization to keep Norv around for one more year, which is what Kevin Acey reported the final year of Norv. Like, Rivers is the one who pushed for it because he loved Norv so much. And that's how much Philip Rivers meant to the organization. He was actually able to save a coach.
What about you, Nick? Obviously, you know, you follow the NFL in depth. Have you had a sense that this is a team that's on the brink of imploding? Is this just a blip in the road from, again, you're just looking for an outsider's perspective on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because I think there's probably similar tensions in a lot of teams where you have, you know, whether it's the offense really talented, the defense sucks, or, you know, where you have one unit that's just, you know, really carrying the rest of the team. And I think it's particularly difficult when that, you know, I guess whatever the struggles are can be personified in one person. And really, I mean, it's always, all that kind of stuff kind of falls on the quarterback. And I think you see a little bit of that with the Chiefs. I mean, just because we've had a dominant defense this whole time, and similar in some ways to the Seahawks, but then we just, you know, the offense has always been a little anemic. We've never really gotten it done. And I think, you know, the team is just like, there's too many leaders in there for them there to be like, and it's also just too small of a market for there to be a lot of like media attention to really get a lot of people like throwing Alex Smith under the bus. I mean, but there's been moments where it nearly happened. I mean, like that, you know, Travis Kelce's like the kind of the biggest loudmouth on our team. And there's been a couple of times where he's like kind of, you know, like intimated that like basically we suck because of Alex Smith. Like when we've lost, and there was like one time where he was like about to go off, and literally, he's surrounded by beat reporters, and Charkhandrick West got up on a chair, like, you know, 10 feet away, and yelled, like, "Hey, Travis, be smart," and, like, pointed to his head. He's like, "Oh, okay, well, I'm not going to say anything, I guess." Like, I think there's some of that, like, boiling under the surface, and I think what's kept things going in Chiefs land isn't Alex Smith is just like a very bland, likable guy, and then by all accounts, everybody who works with him just likes him personally, and so no one really wants to throw him under the bus. And I think Russell Wilson is a good quarterback, but at the same time, he's a bit of a weird cat, and I think it's maybe that is maybe leading this to becoming a little bit of a bigger issue. I mean, obviously, Sherman is a huge personality, and he makes every single one of his opinions known, and Russell Wilson is, you know, he may not be the kind of guy who's able to just, like, instantly tamp all of that down. I don't know. I mean, you have a better sense
Hey, Nick. Have you seen the picture of Russell Wilson with his wife and the baby, and he's, like, holding them all up? Have you seen that picture?
Yes, Exhibit A.
That, to me, tells me that Russell Wilson has absolutely no respect inside the locker room. And you can take that for what it's will, for what you want. But, like, that picture, that's all I need to see, where I just know that Russell Wilson, he's not a Phillip Rivers type style quarterback. He's not going to own the locker room like my quarterback. From that picture, that's all I need to see.
All right, I'm going to – that's
we should get that. We should tweet out that photo.
Certainly became a bizarre conversation piece. So, you know – everything I'm hearing says that, like, some of that stuff is overblown, but there are some lingering tensions. You know, it was well publicized in this offseason that Richard Sherman was potentially on the trade block. Is that something that either of you would be interested in, picking up a slightly used Richard Sherman?
It depends on the cost.
Well, it's weirdly enough, it's been one of the rumored things sort of in connection with Macklin. I mean, it was something that the beat reporters in KC tend to have a pretty good, you know, read on what the front office is thinking and who they're talking to. And they've been, for a while, sort of like tossing out there that Sherman could be a landing spot if Seattle decides to solve this by getting rid of him. And, you know, by getting rid of Macklin, having that extra $10 million this year is probably enough to absorb enough of Sherman's contract either. I mean, I have to look at Sherman's contract, but I think that would either get him under or allow them to tweak it just enough so that, you know, he wouldn't lose money or wouldn't be a crazy restructure and get him in. In terms of the fit, I mean, I actually think the Chiefs' secondary is good. I mean, they have a whole lot of kind of no-name parts that, you know, they're not recognized names outside of Eric Berry and Marcus Peters, but the stats really speak for themselves. I mean, the Chiefs have had, for the last 2 years, have it like the second and third lowest like QB rating against them. They're giving tons of interceptions and turnovers. Yeah, like, you know, I mean, they rank extremely well, and it's, you know, largely because they're coached up really well, but it's because they have a few strong pieces. And I think, I mean, a lot of the, you know, other pieces there are, again, young and growing into their position. So while the idea of a Sherman on one side and Peters on the other side is like really attractive, I'm not sure they really even need to go that route to continue to have a dominant secondary. And also, I mean, if Sherman's, like, problem here is that he's on a dominant defense with a, you know, quarterback that's letting the team down, boy, is he going to have a time in the Alex Smith Chiefs.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And that's the other part of this is, you know, in the article, there's – and this was true for a lot of last year that the offense was not holding up stand in the bargain. And they talk about how, you know, Richard Sherman is the sort to pretty clearly and plainly, you know, will point fingers at individual players, including Russell Wilson. He's quoted as telling Wilson repeatedly, "You suck." So I suppose that would be the other question would be, you know, if a team has to choose between, you know, its star players, it seems obvious that the quarterback is the one that you would have to choose, but, you know, with how strong this team is defensively and their identity around kind of their running game, could they make a move at the quarterback position instead?
I'll trade you Smith for Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's crazy talk, just pushing the conversation forward on that.
Well, I mean, you know, like you said, I mean, that would be an extremely unusual situation. I mean, unless there's something that we don't know about, and, you know, beyond Russell Wilson just being strange, like, you just don't see teams dump quarterbacks, especially Super Bowl winning ones. I mean, that's the sort of, I mean, again, like, I mean, if for some reason they were really considering it, I mean, his value on the trade market would be nuts. So, but still, I mean, that's the sort of thing where that's going to be like a year-long drama that no matter which way it goes, is going to be much, much more destabilizing for the team.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'm kind of bringing that up because, I'm absolutely not advocating for the move. I love Russell Wilson. I think he's an elite quarterback. But the reason why I bring that up is, and Nick, this kind of relates to you as well, is there is some precedent for taking a successful quarterback, perhaps one that goes to an NFC championship game, and jettisoning him for a specific quarterback. In this case, Colin Kaepernick, who, while he didn't sign with the Seahawks did bring him in, worked him out, seemed to have at least kind of discussed some details with him. Now, from my perspective, I'm totally open to the idea. You know, I sort of separate out his kind of his protest and all that stuff, and just, you know, quite simple aside, you know, he has every right to protest however he sees fit. But he's a guy who, I mean, you can't convince me that he's not one of the best 32 quarterbacks on the planet. So what's your guys' take on that Colin Kaepernick situation? I think he'd be a great fit here as a backup. I'm kind of baffled that he's not getting more looks.
Well, I've long said that, I mean, he'd be a great fit for Andy Reid's offense. And I, you know, in all things being equal and like in a Madden world, I would totally sign him.
How mad would Alex Smith be?
That's the thing, and that's why it's never going to happen. I mean, like, the Andy Reid, despite the fact that they drafted Mahomes, he does really like Alex Smith, and they know that they can't do them like that. I mean, that would just be crazy. But also, I personally have no problem with Kaepernick's protest, but it's not a great fit with the fan base of Kansas City, probably. Mm-hmm. There would be boos and anger. I mean, granted, once he starts throwing, you know, he were to throw 30 touchdowns in a season, I don't think they'd care anymore, but you know, I think there is that issue. And look, I mean, like Mike Freeman and some of the other reporters have been making a bigger deal out of this. Is like, you know, is he just being purely blackballed? Is it some combination of he also being kind of a guy who's just strange and difficult to work with outside of his political views, just, you know, in terms of his leadership skills and things like that? Is it his play on the field? I mean, he actually wasn't bad last year on a very bad team. So, I mean, I think he'd be a fit in a lot of different places, but it's just, I think it's a combination of all of that baggage that that makes it difficult for teams to sign off on him. I still think he ends up with somebody around training camp.
What do you think, Ken?
For me, Kaepernick is just, I don't know. I don't know why he can't throw passes at a normal speed. That's what I just think. I look at Kaepernick and there's like everything is a 99 mile an hour fastball, and I think that doesn't work in the NFL. And you see the good quarterbacks have touch on their ball. As for if I would want him on the Chargers, the Charger fan base that doesn't exist in LA because no one wants him there, they wouldn't give a crap about sitting down for the anthem. Like, Southern California is a pretty liberal place, so he would fit in there that way, but I highly doubt the Chargers would do that because they can't afford to do any sort of football move that would affect their PR, because their PR situation is a nightmare right now.
Is there any precedent for a quarterback who has had as many good games as Colin Kaepernick has, then suddenly kind of fall off the cliff over, you know, a 2-year stretch on a team that frankly has been terrible and in horrible flux? But, you know, I look at, you know, what he did from 2012 through 2014. I can't believe he can't get a look. That to me is bizarre. You know, is he perfect? You know, of course not. Right. You know, you're right. Like, he doesn't have any touch, but you know, this is not a guy coming out of college that we're talking about, you know, whether skills translate to the NFL. Dude's played in a Super Bowl as the starting quarterback on one of the teams, and he was one of the big engines of that offense. I just don't get it.
It's the anti-Kurt Warner. It's the anti-Kurt Warner.
So,
I mean, you know, Kurt Warner, no physical skills, is a grocery store guy till he's 28. You know, it's like, he's Brandon Whedon. That's what he is. You know, Brandon Whedon was a 28-year-old guy coming out of college at Oklahoma State, should have gone to the national championship, flamed out. And that's, you know, the Kurt Warner experiment failed. This is the Colin Kaepernick experiment. You know, like, we haven't had Mariota, if he fails, he'll be the Colin Kaepernick of that class.
Yeah, I mean, look at 2014, throws for over 3,300 yards, 60% completion rate, 19 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. And then, you know, the team basically goes to crap after that. I can't believe the guy can't even get a workout someplace other than Seattle. Oh, man. Well, guys, I think that's going to do it, unless you guys have anything else you want to get off your chest.
Just following. Nothing that I can't say for the preview.
Perfect. All right, and so, everybody, that's going to be the thing to watch for throughout the month of June. We're doing our division previews. May recall those from last year. So keep an eye out for those. We're going to go division by division, a deep dive with all the super fans talking about, you know, who's doing well, who's going to be terrible, making some predictions, some evaluations. So this is a key time to be paying attention. If you want to know all about your team, all about your rivals, this is honestly one of the best times for it. Like I mentioned before, I'm trying to line up a special guest who really, really knows deep the Seahawks situation, much deeper than I even. So kind of keep your eyes and ears open for that. I'm going to try and line him up for the Thursday show. We'll see if that works out. In the meantime, Nick, if we wanted to hear more about you and your experience with the Chiefs or your new booze business, how can we find you?
Well, the place where I am honestly too often logged into is Twitter, where you can find me at Clayton Nicholas.
All right. And Ken, if we wanted to hear your San Diego Chargers expertise rather than super fandom, where would we do that?
Well, I'm also an aspiring comic, and you can find all of my wacky scrambled brain thoughts on Twitter at Kenneth James Priest. Kenneth J. Priest. Excuse me.
All right, follow both of those, and I'm sure one of those will be Ken. You can find me at Koreis, that's at Koreis, but you really should be following the show, that's at NFU Podcast. We'll be posting all the stuff that we're doing, some cool interactions with some people as well. You can also email us, nextfanup@gmail.com. Find us online, nextfanup.wordpress.com. And I think that's about it. So with that, we're going to sign off. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.